Hello and welcome to another episode of the Data for Subscriptions podcast, now live on LinkedIn. I'm your host, Behrad Bonjand, and I have the immense pleasure of welcoming Jeff Hollingworth to the show today. Welcome, Jeff.
Thank you very much, Behrad. Great to be here.
Why don't we start with an introduction about yourself, Jeff? What's been your professional passion and what led you to Racket and Symphony?
Yeah, so my background, if you go all the way back, I is a software developer. And in the early 90s, I was fortunate to join Ericsson in their research and development right at the start of the mobile industry. So I developed software and ran software projects around the world for about 10 years, ended up coming to the US via Sweden, moved into business development. We were doing mobile internet in 1998. We knew the potential. And then more recently, I've got involved more on the marketing and running marketing organizations, going through a period while I was embedded in AT&T. I left Ericsson, joined a startup with Deutsche Telekom, focusing on edge computing called Mobile Edge X that got sold to Google. And for about the last 2 years, I've been fortunate enough to work with Rakuten on their new telecom initiative with Rakuten Mobile and Rakuten Symphony.
And can you tell us a little bit more about Rakuten Symphony as well? And what's the mission of the company and how does the business mix look like?
Yeah, well, let me perhaps tell the story of Rakuten in telecom.
Sure.
And for people who don't know Rakuten, in 1997, the founder, Mikitani, had the same insight as Jeff Bezos did, that the internet was going to change how people lived. And he started with retail and e-commerce and built something called Rakuten Ichiba. And that is now the largest retailer, 600,000 merchants in Japan. But also what has happened in Rakuten, it's diversified into all other kinds of business that have been changed by the introduction of internet and computing, especially when computing moved into your pocket. So over 70 different businesses now are inside the Rakuten Group. It's the number one bank in Japan. It's the number one credit card, number one payment service. And in 2014, Mickey was very interested in getting involved in telecom and started an MVNO, but didn't really have the access control. You're always riding on somebody else's technologies. And to an internet person, that's just like, you know, pouring salt into a wound. So in 2018, the Japanese government invited for a fourth mobile network operator. Mickey won that bid and then started building Rakuten Mobile. But he didn't want to build it a traditional way. He couldn't afford to, and there wasn't enough time. So he went all in on the latest technologies, cloud, Open RAN, and complete automation. The same, it's very much the same approach that he took on all his other businesses. And we built a highly efficient, highly programmable network, faster than people believed. No one really thought that was possible, even though the industry and telecom had been speaking about doing this. And then they realized they'd built the ability and products to actually provide this as products and a service to all other telecoms. And that's why Rakuten Symphony was formed, to then take what had been proven in Japan and make available to all of the telecoms around the world. And now the rest of telecom has accepted that this is the change that's required to be competitive going forward. And literally for the last 2 years, Rakuten Symphony has been working with operators across all regions of the world to deliver these kinds of products and services. So that was a really long answer on, and that's Rakuten Symphony.
So that's very helpful. And we're going to come back to some of the use cases that you exemplify with Rakuten, because these are very interesting from the learning points that we want to dig into for potentially how other telcos can look into monetization, which is the topic that we want to talk about. But if we start with a bit of a bigger framing of the landscape today, my take is the following, is that for the last couple of years, for the telco industry, we've been looking at 5G with its greater speeds and capabilities to open the door for new use cases. And we've been talking about 5G monetization. In the last, I would say, year, most of the conversation has tilted towards the advent of AI, and that's going to unlock additional opportunities and use cases as well. The challenge here is that we have really not seen any new use cases, any new growth vectors being deployed, at least at the scale that we all anticipated if we go back 4 or 5 years. So my question to you is, where do we look for growth and how does growth actually look like? Because we attached it to 5G going back 4 or 5 years ago, and now we seem to be attaching it to AI.
Yeah, I think that's a very good question. And I think it's an opportunity to perhaps go into a few more fundamentals of how we view the market. Because in between 5G and AI, there's also been other false horizons that have got the industry excited. The metaverse. I when I was in Mobile World Congress last year, I was on a panel where the discussion was, should every mobile operator have a chief metaverse officer? It was a short panel from my point of view, because I said no. I fear that at Mobile World Congress this year, everyone's going to have replaced metaverse with AI as some kind of magic unicorn that's going to change the industry around. If we come back to your original question, I think the fundamental starting point that's always good is, do you care about technology or do you care about customers? And that foundational approach to the market, I think, defines some of the largest companies that have been most successful versus companies that are struggling to actually fit in and make sense in the context of the developing and real world. So the biggest customer, the biggest companies, Apple, Amazon, Rakuten, they care about customers, and they're trying to serve value to fit into where customers are looking for and have needs. I think the telecom industry is stuck in cycles of obsession about technology, and then it becomes very hard to actually unlock immediate and short-term opportunities that are very large. I mean, the telecom industry is perfectly positioned because it does touch everybody's life 24/7. It is the first thing that people touch in the morning and last thing at night. It is a very healthy industry from a revenue point of view. It's over $1 trillion worldwide in top line revenue. And there's no problem with having a monthly, you know, billing model if you want. But you do need to actually have a customer relationship where you care about your customers and you give them what's valuable. My example is, I mean, telecom is the first industry to be a service provider 100 years ago. Yeah. Now, every single business is a service provider. If you look at a good segue, and I think telecom can learn hugely from looking outside its industry, but Spotify is a great example of a monthly subscription business, but it doesn't ignore its customers. It continuously innovates and feeds its customers to ensure the customers are always staying and always providing, you know, new opportunities to interact with them. AI, if we go to the end of your conversation or your question, it's just the latest technology. It's incredibly powerful. It's going to change everything. So when I say it's the latest technology, I'm not belittling AI at all. I do see AI as being the next wave of technology change that comes after 2007, when we went Web 2.0, smartphones, mobile broadband, and we've seen what happened over the last 15 years. AI wipes the slate clean, but the challenge is that the winners will be the people who are already good at using that kind of tooling and understand it. The laggards either catch up really quickly in being good and disciplined, or actually it means that they'll be falling farther behind.
Yeah. You put Rakuten in the same mix, and when you spoke about companies who understand customer value and how to deliver on it, next to Apple, for example, can we go back to, you mentioned quickly when you introduced Rakuten, some of the services that Rakuten provides. Why don't we go through them and list a couple of them, and let's dig into them a bit. You mentioned, for example, that Rakuten is the number one bank and a retailer, but what are some of the most interesting services that Rakuten provides?
Well, if we maybe go to the real origin story of Rakuten, which is the online shopping, there was a very different philosophy that Mickey had versus Amazon in terms of what he wanted to build, because he wanted to empower the small shop owner to take advantage of the new technologies and increase their reach. So he wanted to take the small merchandiser and not become somebody that sees what's selling well and replace it with, you know, something that's mass market, but rather empower them to do more and be more. And that's why there's over 600,000 small to medium enterprises served on that platform today. The other interesting question in the context of what we're speaking about is, of course, let's just play a silly mind game. Let's say that we enable all of those merchants to be online, but there's no ability to tell any of the customers what they're selling or why it might be valuable or be discoverable inside that ecosystem. They're not going to sell very much. But that's what telecom does. Telecom just gives you a connection and it says goodbye. I think we're looking for something that in telecom is more like smart telecom, because connectivity is very valuable. It's like electricity. I mean, I know we hate being called a utility, but if you don't want to be called a utility, don't behave like a utility. And even the utilities don't behave like utilities. So now you have smart meters in electricity, smart meters in gas. They had to introduce a smart device. In telecom, we have the smart device. We're just not actually allowing our customers to be more intelligent in using our services better, and then allowing ourselves to give up. So I went off track there a little bit. But I think the ethos of what's important is always going to come down to the ability to provide something that people want, customers want, in a more helpful way. And yep. the last end point of this is really why AI is important, because in Rakuten, there's an initiative it's called the AI-anization of Rakuten. So all those 70 businesses are now all tasked with applying AI to be able to serve customers better. And Rakuten's a good example of a company that is well positioned to do that, because it already understands data. It already understands quality of that data and how to use that data. So it's already an internet native which I know we're going to come on to later. That's a foundational requirement to be successful.
Yeah, and it's good that you mentioned that, because I think that if I look at, you know, one of the advantages that telcos have is arguably one of the purest subscriber data around. For the reasons you mentioned, it's the device that maybe we don't even turn it off during nights, but definitely we start using in the morning. It goes with us everywhere. We use it constantly. The challenge for telco is that we've never managed to be able to put that into use or monetize, if we want to use that term. And this is the part that I wanted to dig a little bit deeper into the Rakuten services, because from my understanding, this is what Rakuten has been able to do. And between the different business divisions that providing the different services, you've been able to kind of learn from that data and take that data and make it into something that you can turn into something valuable for the customers. So why don't we talk through first and foremost why having structured quality data, it's so imperative. And then from there, we can venture into how do you actually do that specifically in Rakuten. But let's start with the first question.
Well, one thing that I'm probably going to get scored by Rakuten people in Japan on this podcast on how well I did. One thing I haven't mentioned at all is that Rakuten is the largest rewards points and loyalty points company in Japan. So at the heart of Rakuten, you are not a customer of Rakuten, you are a member of Rakuten's group. You're a Rakuten member. And everything you do in the group earns you points, and those points can be used to buy you things. So if we come back to that customer relationship, we've changed how the customers value what Rakuten does. There's customers in Japan who never pay a mobile phone bill because their service is covered by the points that they're earning off the Rakuten services. It's the Amazon Prime of telecom. There's an uplift. So this is another good insight. Metrics are really important on what you measure your business on. One of Rakuten's core measures is gross merchandising sales. So how much are you actually transacting through the system? Rakuten mobile subscribers transact 52% more in the Rakuten group than non-Rakuten mobile subscribers. We cross-sell between the services, and we have metrics on this. So if you're a Rakuten Bank customer, you literally get served because it's all online, Rakuten Bank, of course. You get served, do you want to be a Rakuten mobile subscriber? Click here. We already have your government-approved identity because you're a bank customer. So we provision a SIM, eSIM. Everything's eSIM, by the way. And you immediately become a Rakuten mobile subscriber. So that goes across all of the different businesses. Underneath all of those businesses is a common data lake of 200 unique data points that then allow us to serve customers in across all of those different businesses and in a very it's the opposite of advertising. If you're giving people what they actually want and they're getting rewarded for it, then they pay you back in loyalty and additional business. It's this hasn't changed since the beginning of business. This is why I mean, when you're trying to become successful, do you start with technology looking for a problem, or do you start with customers looking for solutions? And I think we know the answer, but we've got stuck in a loop a little bit.
So the gist of it is that at Rakuten, there is a common data layer with structured quality data that every one of the service provider units taps into, which allows you then to do this loop of learning for what services are used, then building that into your loyalty program and so on. Okay. What prevents other telcos to do the same, Jeff? Because if we just, from a technology perspective, to your point, it's there. What's prevented or preventing other telcos to do the same?
Yeah, I think the first thing we have to embrace is the last thing you just said. It's actually not there. Because what is currently existing in telecom is legacy infrastructure and legacy operations from the last 30 years of the mobile industry. Let's just stay in mobile at the moment. So there is a huge amount of data that flows through that system, but that data is not available or addressable by the business, especially in real time. It's siloed, it's locked. Everybody knows this. It's not been cleaned, it's not being driven through quality. So the first thing that telecom has to do is actually what Rakuten has spent the last 5 years doing, which is building a modern infrastructure. And it's not the infrastructure per se, it's the software layer that sits on top of the hardware layer that allows you to take all of the institutional data and surface it into a consistent, usable form. This is why I always get nervous when we speak to magic bullets. That journey, we all know in telecom, and there's reasons, we all know in telecom it's really hard to do that. It's a transformation. We're no different. I've listened to some of your other podcasts that I thought were really good, by the way, but I think we have a lot in common with the manufacturing industries, where we have a certain culture, we have a certain need to be risk adverse, we have a scale that's massive. So we have to be really good at moving from who we are today to who we need to be in the future. But the only way to do that is by starting today in a really disciplined way and doing the hard, dirty work. And a lot of that is to do with re-engineering the basic business processes, work processes, and ultimately what you're trying to get out is the data that you're referring to, because that's what actually allows you to improve your operation and also then start monetizing, building a monetizing platform above as well.
Let's talk a bit about where, again, learning from where Rakuten is going. You said that there's a big effort around making everything basically AI enabled. So if we look ahead the next year or so for Rakuten, or maybe two, Where is Rakuten really aiming to go, and with that initiative in mind?
Yeah, so let's at this point let's break into perhaps two perspectives where the data is valuable or the transformation is useful. We have Rakuten Symphony that really focuses on the enabling the network operations and network supply chain to be as highly automated and efficient as possible. We should have as few manual processes and tasks in there. And then on above there, we have the monetization and the revenue growth that we have to solve as telecom. Otherwise, it doesn't matter how efficient you are. That's what we use Rakuten Mobile as the proving ground of, that then we can replicate into different countries and with different operators. So on the Rakuten Symphony side, it's actually AI is a more advanced tooling for our existing journey, because we've focused on automating anything that can be automated in network operations. And that's not only network operations. That's actually the planning of networks, the building of networks, and then finally the lifecycle support, the operating of it. So we've moved all of the required data to do that online into a centralized repository. Let me give you an example of how this is the journey that's required for a telco to do this. Telcos build new sites all of the time. Traditionally, that's not been the focus of the industry. So all mobile operators and fixed line operators have come up with their own internal tooling, their own internal ways of managing how to plan sites, build sites, and then actually bring those sites on live, online, commission them. So every single telco has hundreds of legacy IT stacks that are doing this. Now, when I say an IT stack, that might be as unsophisticated as email in an Excel spreadsheet. It moves up to being a web app that IT internally developed in the 90s. Most of these telcos have gone through acquisitions and mergers, and so there tends to be silos of those mechanisms. And that means that data is locked in Excel spreadsheets that are managed in email, being passed through people. The knowledge of the processes is institutional. It's really hard to unlock that. Now, we're doing work with a big tier one operator that we're going to show in Mobile World Congress. But they want to get rid of these legacy IT stacks. The first thing we've done is gone through design workshops on what those actual processes should be. And what becomes interesting is that we can compare with how they're doing it today, because organically that's where they ended up, versus how we did it in Japan when we didn't have any, we already had the internet, we already had composable software tools that allow us to industrialize it. And we've retired a number of those legacy IT stacks from operation. So we completely got rid of that cost. But the bigger transformation that started to happen is now we have all that centralized data. So now we can start asking questions to that data of why are certain markets taking longer than other markets? What really is the status of our program? These projects are massive. They're deploying tens of thousands of sites, which different subcontractors and vendors are performing the best and why, which should like be rewarded more business on a performance basis. So all the way through that, then that planning data is actually used in the next phase, which is when you start building the sites, because then you can automatically scan the equipment on site and it updates that inventory. And then when you all built, all done, and you plug it in, there's not one human that needs to touch it because you have all of the knowledge of what that site looks like. It's like a digital twin of the site. That's what we really have. Yeah. And you can automatically provision it. If you don't have that knowledge inside your digital systems, you can't automate it. If you can't automate it, you can't get rid of people. And if you can't get rid of people, you're going to be slow and manual. And then after you've automated it, the next thing you can do is what you were saying is that you can start to apply AI models to that data to decide what is it that I can't see that I should see that I can actually improve. You can start to ask questions of the data these days.
Yeah. That's on the Rocket and Symphony. And I think that the efficiency gains that we all expect from the enablement of AI, that to me is probably the first and most visible value that we're going to see from it. I personally, when it comes to AI at this point, and going back to what we're discussing in terms of how we would be able to monetize or create value for customers, I think this is actually going back to the original question of understanding your customers and how do you kind of flip it on its head. But this one, this part of this though connected more to Rakuten because of the services that the parent company provides. So if we flip it there, where is the next kind of growth vector for Rakuten, if any, based on the platform that you built now? Meaning access to data, understanding of the behaviors of your customers.
I think from a Rakuten point of view, it's more of the same. For Rakuten in Japan, it's more of how can we continue to increase the value we provide to customers and increase our sophistication around being able to do that where it's value and not abuse. I think that's always the case when you get very sophisticated. I think the opportunities for telecom outside of Rakuten are absolutely massive. I think everything in the world is moving towards a telecom industry that, if it can perform appropriately, it will get rewarded. Telecoms are correctly positioned as enablers of the online behavior that we have. The countries that they are regulated within are all concerned about ensuring that the data is kept safe, secure, and everybody is not being abused by people from abroad. The biggest threat vector for civilized society, I believe at the moment, is that AI is going to empower malicious actors more effectively than honest citizens. And we're already seeing this. The sophistication now of being able to spoof voices, spoof videos, and perform fraud is accelerating at a tremendous rate. We need to have systems in place that can accredit the origin of different transactions and different content sources, so you can verify, no, this is actually who they say they are, or this person who's trying to, you know, buy these things are actually these people. Telecom is perfectly positioned to provide those kinds of services and guarantees in a way that governments actually already trust them and they match the regulation. So I only see a tremendously bright future for telecom. I also don't see that telecom needs to keep jumping on short-term fixes like magic unicorns. I see telecom needs to be building plans over the next 3 to 5 years to have an operational capability to deliver on some of these real needs. And they will get paid. I'll give a real world example that I find incredibly exciting. And as we started, I've worked in telecom for all of my life. For the last 20 years, as a software person in the US, watching the internet grow up, I've been frustrated with telecom's lack of ability to participate in the online ecosystem. And I've been involved in every single GSMA initiative to do API exposure since time began. And they've always gone wrong because it's technology and pride of network versus anything that's valuable. For the first time, I'm seeing APIs come out of the telecom industry that are making material difference to society. And they are around fraud APIs. And they're really simple APIs. Is the person currently asking for this transaction belonging to a SIM that's just recently been swapped? Is this person currently busy on their phone? Is this person in the country they say they are? All of this is being provided in a completely privacy-centric way. And there were countries, the second thing Telecom's done for the first time is that operators in a country are collaborating, because it's actually not a global collaboration that's needed. It's a country collaboration for most of this. So I know in some countries they are currently already building, they've already got a $30 million revenue, and all they're seeing is more opportunities to do more. So I would recommend every single telco looks at this and then starts to apply their dreams into this kind of direction, because it's these kinds of behaviors where once you start doing something where it's successful, you find more success. And that's where AI, you can start to use it and you will find even more success.
I share your view in terms of telecoms being a good place to strike from, meaning that it's become more and more evident in the last few years that as we are seeing an increased level of malicious attempts, if I use your phrasing, and we have barely started the journey in terms of really getting pervasive services, such as some of the ones that you explained as it's offered in Japan through Rakuten. But as we kind of expect to see that across markets, it's quite clear that it's we need a system that works. And Telecom has a great position to strike from. But in my view, I expect a more of a clear division of telcos that realized that they need to build this data platform that you refer to was really the secret sauce, if you will, to Rakuten to enable itself to become a service provider. Those telcos that managed to build this to be able to work closer to their customer base versus those who remain in this bitpipe provider position. And for not lack of trying, because I think many telcos have tried to say that we can do more, but they're not able to. I think that's going to be the division if we look ahead, if I had to kind of guess the next 3 to 5 years. And personally, and we didn't really touch 6G and don't want to open that can of worms necessarily. I second your view is that I don't think it's yet another technology that we need to kind of unlock this, because we probably have the capacity and capability that we need today.
Since you went there, okay. Let me go on to the other shoulder and the pessimistic side.
Okay.
So what really is a telecom? What is a telecom? Is Rakuten a telecom? Absolutely not. Rakuten is Rakuten a service provider? Yeah, probably. Was it a service provider before it did telecom? Yeah, probably. There are no boundaries on capabilities of other companies doing this at all. There are interesting relationships on trust and status in countries, but banks have that. Other companies have that. If telecom doesn't change, telecom operators are going to really struggle. They will sell off assets. They will do less. There is a danger that worst case, aren't involved in any of these growth opportunities. Now, let's embrace that for a little while. You end up probably being a wholesale provider to other people who are seizing these opportunities.
Right.
That is a fantastic business. It's a brilliant business if you do it well. But you can't be an inefficient wholesale provider. So there is, I think, an inflection point in the market. And I completely agree with what you just said. usually with inflection points, there are people that go in one direction and people that go in another direction, and it's not clear until the directions are already at velocity, and then it's too late. And I think we see a lot of movement at the moment in that regard. And the technologies that already exist that are coming to maturity are going to completely break the relationship, the traditional relationship, where for me to change provider requires me to go into a shop to get a bit of plastic that then they're begging me that not to change, and also the plastic's really hard to get. A lot of those walls that we've put up as an industry to keep people captive will come down over the next few years, because there's people in different industries that want them to come down. Maybe the closing remark on this is, decide what you want to be seriously. Do it seriously, and you have the biggest chance of being exactly what you want to be seriously. But don't look for magic unicorns. I am nervous that we go to Mobile World Congress and AI is an answer to the industry. But what's it an answer to? What are we trying to do? There's more fundamental questions I think all of us have to ask.
And on that note, we wrap it up for today. Thank you so much, Jeff, for your time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Behdad.